It's showtime.
Now, back to the Kim Pagano Show on News Talk 1520 KVTA.
Welcome back, everyone, and thank you so much for being here and joining me this beautiful day here on Saturday. And, of course, I'm here every Saturday from 2 to 4 on 1520 KVTA, and you are listening to The Kim Pagano Show. And right now, our next guest is Marianne Williamson, and her new book is The Law of Divine Compensation on Work, Money, and Miracles. And really, you know what? That's what our life is. It's a miracle, and we just know how to have to know how to position it. So I'm so excited to bring Marianne right now. Marianne, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you so much for joining us here.
Well, I appreciate your having me.
Absolutely. Your book, The Law of Divine Compensation on Work, Money, and Miracles. But not only this, you have so many books and so many different avenues that you have helped so many people. Tell us a little bit about yourself for anyone that doesn't know you.
Well, I began giving lectures in 1983 in Los Angeles, and I'm a student of a set of books called A Course in Miracles. And the Course is not a religion. There's no dogma. There's no doctrine. But it has been referred to as a self-study program of spiritual psychotherapy. It's a training in relinquishing a thought system based on fear and accepting instead a thought system based on love. So I began sharing my understanding of these books, which make as their goal the attainment of inner peace through the practice of forgiveness. And I began talking about the books in 1983, and then my first book came out in 1992, and I was very fortunate. This was before Oprah Winfrey had her book club, but my book, A Return to Love, became the first book that she gave
You just gave me chills. That's so exciting. I mean, yeah. Really. And that, you know, I mean, it's just you were ahead of your time.
I think I kind of kicked a door in. I think there was a professional niche that actually didn't exist at that time.
Something in your life that how did you know to do this at that time of your life?
Well, I think I was blessed by the fact that it wasn't anything I knew to do. I think I was blessed by a kind of naivete. There wasn't anything to be ambitious for. There was no career niche for standing up and just talking about God outside a religious context, talking about forgiveness, talking about faith, talking about compassion and the miracles that love works. You could be a clergy person, and I didn't feel moved to do that. You could be a college professor teaching, let's say, in a seminary or comparative religion courses. I didn't feel moved to do that. So I didn't think I was doing anything other than just standing up and talking.
Marianne, I saw you on Saturday, and you are just amazing.
Oh, thank you.
I just love how you present yourself. I love the way that you present and the information that you have. And, you know, and so I have started kind of telling people, you know, I've been talking about it a lot. I'm a life coach, and I've just been using a lot of what you say. But what I love about it also is it's not about God as in, you know, this religious, you don't push that. But one thing you did say, and talking about your life path, is the acorn just becomes the oak tree.
Right.
And so talk a little bit about that, about people's life paths and how you just fell into it, it sounds like, because that was what you were just meant to be doing.
Well, and that is exactly the gist of the law of divine compensation. The idea, as you said, the bud becomes the blossom, the embryo becomes the baby, the acorn becomes the oak tree. There is clearly a natural intelligence at the heart of things. It's all over nature. And it's not only true of our bodies that our hearts beat and our lungs breathe. It's not as though our physical selves were created and then we were just plopped onto the earth and we have to take it from here. The spiritual notion is that just as there is a divine architecture by which the embryo becomes the baby and the acorn becomes an oak tree, there is also a divine architecture by which we, should we align ourselves with that divine blueprint, which is etched in our hearts every moment, by which we are lifted to the highest level of creative possibility in this lifetime. So for me, as you just said, that meant I just was led, like I said, I was naive. I didn't have any ambition around it. But I was led to a career path that is, for me, joyous and creative and makes me feel good. And the idea of divine compensation is that that is true for everyone, that there is a programming in the universe by which everyone on every level is led to a destiny that is the highest creative possibility for this lifetime.
And really, you know, if for anybody that's just joining us right now, you are listening to The Kim Pagano Show. And my show is all about being your highest and living your best life and knowing how to get there. And I'm so excited to have Marianne Williamson on my show right now. Her book is The Law of Divine Compensation on Work, Money, and Miracles. And, you know, my question, I know, Sharon, you had another question, but why did you focus on abundance and our financial lives in your new book?
Well, you know, there's a line in the Course in Miracles where it says you think you have many different problems, but you really only have one. Mm. And that is your separation from God or the love in your heart by whatever name you call it. So I began to write this book when the recession was at its most intense. And still, of course, the recovery is slower than we wish. And there's a lot of tension, and there's a lot of anxiety, and there's a lot of fear. And most of us have had our financial ups and downs. So what I write about is the miracles that flow naturally and automatically when the heart is open. And this applies to relationships. This applies to health. This applies to work and money. It applies to work and money no more and no less than it applies to anything else.
Marianne, tell us what you tell people when they say to you, we know all of this, we have all the tools, why are we not doing it?
Well, you know, there's a line in the Course in Miracles where it says that enlightenment begins as an abstract concept. And you're right, we all have the abstract concept. But then it says, it takes a journey without distance from the head to the heart. You know, the world we live in is dominated by fear-based thought, and we are taught, we are trained into a fear-based thought system. So the spiritual journey has to do with unlearning the thinking of the world and substituting for that the thinking of love, compassion, forgiveness, and so forth. It's difficult sometimes because it's like a mental undertow. You know, it's like if you're in the ocean and there's an undertow and it's keeping you in a certain direction. Everywhere you look, most conversations, most newspaper reports are in the ain't it awful category. You know, in this world, everything that can go wrong does go wrong. However, on the spiritual plane, everything that can go right does go right. More and more people now, sometimes through a religious journey, sometimes through a secular journey, are beginning to live more inner-directed lives, realizing that it's our inner power of love or forgiveness, of kindness, of impeccability, of character, of ethics, that opens the door, that creates breakthroughs in a way that no external action alone can do.
We'll talk about how we selfishly do forgiveness and how we deflect our miracles.
I want to read something, though, that is in your new book, and it's by aligning yourself with the thoughts of infinite love for yourself and others, you gain dominance over the lower thoughts, forms of the world. Tell us your thoughts on that.
Well, that's kind of the opposite of nice guys finish last. You know, nice guys finish last is actually a lie. They might, you know, in short term, but not in long term. The idea here is that, and this is counterintuitive, but when we are over-identified with the world, it actually gives us less power in the world. The greatest power we can have to navigate the physical plane and the material world is to have a very serious sense that we are not of this world. We are spiritual beings, and we are here to love and to receive love. This does not make us ditzy. This does not make us naive. This does not make us, you know, la-la people. This actually gives us a sense of inner peace that enables us to be more intelligent about situations, more peaceful about situations, and more attractive. You know, attractive is an interesting word. It means you attract. And when we have harmony and peace in our hearts, we are far more likely to attract positive relationships, breakthroughs, investments, jobs, anything that creates more abundance, prosperity, peace, and love in the mortal world.
Marianne, you know, wow, when you said attractive, I never really thought of how that word really resonates. But it really is. I mean, it's such a powerful, it's almost like a magnet.
Exactly. The idea is that the soul has a magnetic power.
Wow.
The human personality has a dynamic power. The human personality, we go out and get things. the soul attracts things to us. And when it's when you're working with both those things that you have the most powerful life.
Kim, you know how I talk about people standing in your energy field? Like when people want to be, Marianne, don't you find that people are like in your energy field? They want to be standing right next to you.
And that is such an important issue when it comes to work. Because I don't care what your resume is. I don't care what your skill set is. People aren't going to hire you or promote you if they simply don't like you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And no matter what your skill set or your resume or mistakes in your past, if, as you say, your energy field is something that people feel positive about, people feel inspired by, people feel they trust, then doors will be open for you.
Oh, how, I mean, really, that is pretty amazing right there. What is the law of divine compensation?
The law of divine compensation is just a way to describe two issues in the way the universe operates. Number one, that the universe is self-organizing. Going back to the acorn becoming the oak tree or the embryo becoming the baby, the universe knows how to take a sperm and an egg and turn it into this extraordinary, beyond anything the mortal mind can even conceive, panoply of cells that then become brain and lungs and fingers and eyes and toes and all the things that make up the human body. So the universe knows what it's doing. There is some invisible patterning. That's number one. And the idea of spiritual surrender is knowing that that native intelligence applies as much to the unfolding of your life here on Earth as it does to the unfolding of your bodily mechanism. That as we, the difference between the acorn and the embryo and the bud turning into a flower, the difference between those things and you and me is that you and I can say no.
Mm.
You and I can say, I don't want to.
Right.
So with every thought we think, if our heart is open and we are standing in love, the natural pattern works through us. When we close our hearts, though, we are deflecting the miracle. We are deflecting the natural pattern.
Wow, very interesting. You know,
and then, oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Can I just say one little thing?
Please,
the second principle in the issue of divine compensation is that when, look at the body is not only set up for health and it is set up to thrive, but it is also set up to heal itself if something goes wrong. You know, let's say you cut your finger and you can watch how the body heals the cut. Well, similarly, not only is the universe self-organizing, but the universe is self-correcting. So that if there is a recession, there is a foreclosure, there is a mistake made, there is a bad investment, there is any area of life where we deviate from the highest, most correct pattern of love and prosperity for all things inside and out, the universe, like a GPS, just recalibrates and creates a new route automatically.
You know, right now in our studio, we have another guest of mine, Roland Reeve, and he specializes in acupuncture and functional medicine and natural and homeopathy. I mean, that's exactly what you talk about, right, Roland?
Yes, well, in many ways, in many other words than I would put it, but very eloquently said, most times we need to have the patient actually step aside and let healing mm-hmm. take place.
On every level, physically and mm-hmm. spiritually. Yeah.
Correct, yes, absolutely. And so you definitely put that very eloquently. Also, that miracle of life in itself, as you say, of the unfolding of that embryo. It's very nice said and rings a bell to me, true to me as well, that development, and then, but what you say actually, that it continues once we have become a human being of that embryo, that it actually continues that, and that's a new concept which I will embrace very, very wholeheartedly.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, you talk about here in a self-organizing and self-correcting universe. You know, so many of us think, and believe me, before I really got into spiritual living and really trust and not living out of the fear, I was so thinking that I can control it.
Right.
And we can't. And I want to make sure that my listeners really hear that if things are not going right in your life, sometimes we have to sit back and really self-correct it in a sense that we have to trust. Is that correct, Marianne?
Well, yes, and really then it would be the opposite of self-correction. Because as you were just saying, you not only can you not control it, you don't need to control it. And when you try to control it, you actually interrupt the pattern.
Correct.
The embryo doesn't have to control the process of becoming a baby. And it's like Roland was just saying, you step back. you take your hands off the steering wheel. It's like when you're skidding, and the best thing you can do in certain situations is just take your hands off and let nature correct itself through you. When you're in that state of spiritual emptiness, whether you call it the holy instant, that state we achieve through prayer, through meditation, the Zen mind, whatever words we use it, in that stillness, as we find a stillness in our hearts and our psyches, the still mind, the beginner's mind, the loving mind, then actually the molecules of the universe will rearrange themselves for us in ways that we ourselves could not make happen.
Marianne, I think you just answered my question, but I still will pose it. How does, for a layman, let's say, a completely spiritual layman, because what I'm hearing is also that we should follow that path, and my inner voice says, well, how do I hear that voice who tells me how to follow the path? Letting that happen, mm-hmm. you know, listening to that voice, how do I access that voice? How do I hear that voice?
More and more, as you say, spiritual laymen are becoming open to the values of meditation. A lot of times people talk now in terms of the phrase mindfulness, which is just a more secular presentation of the notion of the mind quieting. I think whether we deem ourselves spiritual or not, and actually everybody's on a spiritual path, some people just don't know it, I think the issue of the quieter mind, mindfulness, the idea that we live in a world that is going too fast, it's chaotic. There's this assault of modernity, technology, and so forth. And people are beginning to realize more and more, I made that mistake because I was going too quickly. Mm. I made that mistake because I didn't think it through. I made that mistake because I didn't really check with my own inner knowing. Mm-hmm. And so whether we're speaking of these things in terms of secular or spiritual terms, there's a sense people have that we're spinning out in this civilization, and we have to move back in. Things have gotten very off balance that way. And regardless what you name it, there's a quieting of the mind where we are retrieving our wisdom, retrieving our real emotional sobriety, maturity, consciousness, and so forth. And as we do that, the universe does right itself.
Wow. Really so refreshing. I just want to remind any of my listeners that if you're just tuning in right now, you're listening to The Kim Pagano Show, and we're talking with Marianne Williamson, and her new book is The Law of Divine Compensation on Work, Money, and Miracles. And, you know, I mean, it really is so true. Now, what about finding out your true purpose?
Well, from a perspective, from a spiritual perspective, we all have the same true purpose. You, both, all of us on this call right now, and everybody listening, we all have the same purpose, and that is to be the best we can possibly be, that we are open-hearted people, that we extend compassion, that we give love, that we receive love, that we seek in any situation that comes around. If the last time it came around, we were good, let's try to be great this time. If the last time it came around, we weren't so good, let's try to be good this time. As we stand in that place, knowing that we have a common purpose, and that is to learn to embody love, then the form of our service, the form by which we embody it, like you were saying, Roland's into homeopathy, you're into using the media, I'm into writing books and teaching. We all have different forms or ministries, you could call it, but we all have the same purpose. And when we're concentrated on the content and not the form, the purpose just falls at our feet.
Wow, beautiful. Beautifully said. Now, you know, in your book, the subtitle refers to work, money, and miracles. What is that? What does that, the law of divine compensation, say about each one?
Well, the issue, as I said before, is that with work and money, no more, no less than with anything else, the universe knows how to make things perfect. So money, you know, the idea of fair exchange. The money of fair exchange is not just an economic principle, it is a spiritual principle. So the key to making anything work is to return it to its spiritual foundation, to make anything an aspect of love. So if you see yourself, your work, as an expression of your love, you know, we live in a society that says things like this, take the bull by the horns. Well, how insane would that be? I mean, that's like suicidal to take a bull by the horns, right? Yeah,
this is so true.
So the thinking of the world is 180 degrees away from the speaking of the heart. So the heart says, take your work, take your talents, take your energies, your resources, your skill set, and say to life, use me. If there's any way, what I know, what I can do, any way that my skills or the skills that I can build could be of service to life, may it be so. And as we do that, it's though we have, as Martin Luther King would say, cosmic companionship. And then that is how a career then, instead of being a job that you're going out to find, it becomes a calling that organically rises from inside you. And the fact that you put out your abundance and that others who will receive on some level the abundance, you're putting out the abundance of your talent, the abundance of your energy, the abundance of your willingness and desire to be a good instrument of whatever it is that you do. And then other people receive some level of abundance from that, and they pay you back in a fair exchange, one form of which is money. That makes work and money a part of the holy purpose of the universe, not a bad thing.
Makes so much sense.
What would you say to somebody who is just so rooted in fear?
Well, the Course in Miracles says that fear is to love what darkness is to light. Darkness is not a thing. It is the absence of a thing.
Wow.
Fear is not a thing. It is the absence of a thing. As we fill our minds with loving thought, loving intention, proactively and vigorously to wake up every morning, prayer, meditation, mm-hmm. mindfulness, really rooting ourselves in that. May I be an instrument of love today. When you fill your mind with loving thoughts, the neurotic fear-based thoughts literally cannot stand in the same space.
Right.
And where the mistake that most of us make is we try to analyze the fear to get rid of it. We try to hit the fear to get rid of it. You can't analyze darkness to get rid of it. You can't hit darkness, get rid of it. You turn on the light and the darkness is gone.
And you can only think one thought at a time. So
exactly, exactly.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And is it true that we are either blaming ourselves or blessing ourselves when it comes to our lives?
Well, any thought is either, there's a line in the Course in Miracles where it says, you are either, with every thought, you are either host to God or hostage to the ego, which is the same thing as saying with every thought, we are either opening our hearts and extending love, or we are closing our hearts, which means we will be projecting fear. So any moment when I choose love, I can't be afraid, and any time I choose fear, I cannot see the love.
Wow. You say it so beautifully.
Well,
I'm telling you. Wow. Now, you have a lot of things going on, but what do you do in L.A. that I want to share with everyone?
Oh, thank you. I lecture every Monday night on A Course in Miracles, based Course in Miracles, at the Saban Theater at 8440 Wilshire Boulevard, which is just east of La Cienega. And people can find out more about that at my website, marianne.com.
And is anybody welcome there?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Okay. And absolutely. How long have you been doing that?
Since 1983.
Ooh.
I've been speaking and doing what I do for 29 years.
Wow. It really shows. You are so rooted in what you believe.
Thank you.
And I think that that's beautiful. This has just been amazing having you on my show, and
thank
I hope
so
that
much.
I can have you back.
Anytime. I'm grateful for the opportunity.
When we are, if any of my listeners out there are in the midst of a struggle or frustration or stress or anxiety, maybe things aren't exactly in their life, can you give them one tip that they can kind of work with?
Whoever it is you're not forgiving, at least be willing to.
Oh, gosh, this was amazing.
Oops,
yeah.
I
know, I'm telling you.
Well, wow. She's on Saturday, she said, write down three things that you feel are stopping you from getting your miracles. What are the three things?
God, you just gave me chills. I'm telling you, I love it. Marianne, a pleasure to have you on my show.
Thank you so much.
And I hope to have you back soon.
I hope so. Thank you so much. God bless you guys.
Thank you. And you too. And happy holidays.
Bye. You too.
All right. Gosh. Well, Tom, do we need to take a break? Are we good to go? We're good to go. Let's talk about now, Roland's been here and Sharon's been here. And Roland, I love what you do. It really, we've been talking about kind of getting our lives together in so many ways, but sometimes we don't take the best care of our own bodies. And sometimes it's lack of knowledge more than anything, because, we talked about it, you know, people don't know we are hungry, we eat, right? But you actually asked me, how much food does your body really need? Let's talk a little bit about that. And Roland, for anybody that's just tuning in right now, you are listening to The Kim Pagano Show. I want to reintroduce Roland Reif, and he specializes in acupuncture, functional medicine, using Eastern and Western herbal, natural and homeopathy, and also vitamins to cater to your individual needs to make your body your best. I mean, really.
Well, thank you, Kim, for having me on the show. It's quite the segue to follow that course of miracle and the path of spiritual beings. So now duck to the food, which is sometimes also spiritual, I guess, for many people.
Well, it really is, because if your body's not in alignment and you're not feeling good, it's hard to get to know how you feel, right?
Very much so. And it clouds the issue. And I think it also clouds your spirituality or your emotional path in life if you are clouding it with too much food, the bad food, and so on. Much is said about what to eat. But I think we want to today touch on the topic of how much to eat. You know, that's because quantity is really of issue on anything. It doesn't matter if it's a good thing. If you do too much, it becomes a bad thing. So as you said, Kim, you came to visit me at my office, and we did a little bit of an analysis and so on. And in the course of that, I asked you, when you're eating, who are you feeding? And I think we should ask ourselves that. And it occurs to me, actually, in the course of treating patients, of asking them, by the way, when you're eating, who are you feeding? And it seems to be a strange question, because every time people are really, or patients are quite baffled by that. And mostly I get the answer, well, the whole of me, everything. And I think that's where we go wrong. We don't have to feed the whole body per se, because think about it. We are made out of about 50 to 60% of water. So if your body is made out of 50 to 60% water, depends in what age of life you are, or if you're female or male, we certainly don't have to feed the water. So let's just say 50% of you is water. Well, so we don't need to feed that part. So that's not all of you. We certainly don't have to feed the water. Sharon,
let's talk about the water a second. You know how they say drink 8 glasses of water a day, but the truth is we are taking in so much water in different ways, whether you're drinking tea or, you know, in our food and everything. So we don't really need to be drinking 8 glasses of water a day, right?
Well, it's the 8 glasses of water come from 64 ounces of fluids. Now, some fluids don't count as water. I don't count the coffee as water, really, because it has too much substance in it. If you're drinking in a V8 juice, it's partially meal and partially drink. But the actual 8 ounces of water came from statistics that your body needs 50% of your body weight in ounces in water. So let's say you're 180 pounds for a male. He needs 90 ounces of water. For a female, let's say 110 pounds of body weight of a female, we need 55 ounces of water. So 50% of your body weight in ounces is what you need to change that water into a healthy environment.
What you're saying, what I'm hearing is also be mindful. You know, one shoe doesn't fit everybody.
Very much so. And you know, that 64 8-ounce glass of water, that's kind of an arbitrary number which should fit everybody. It doesn't. It came out of that 50% of water. So going back to who are you feeding when you're eating, so we said we are at least, hopefully, 50% of you should be water. You're actually born with 70% of you is water. So if we take you and take that body and take all the water out of you, so there's only 30% of you is left.
So that's all you should be feeding, correct?
Not even that.
Not even that.
That's
because
still
then you've got
not
your
alive.
Bones, right?
Exactly. And, you have your bones, you have your teeth, you have your hair, you have, you have feces, you have urine, you have byproducts. You don't need to feed all that.
So why are we all so hungry?
Well, that's
emotional
a good question.
Emotional hunger.
And, you know, people also, when I said, who are you feeding? And some people who are really honest, they say, well, my face. Well, but that's partially the truth, right?
I did not say that, okay? I did not say that, but
many times we say, we feed my face or I feed my emotions.
Right.
You know, but when it comes down to who should we really feed? Who should we give that nourishment of protein, fat, and carbohydrates in the right proportion and so on? We should only feed who is alive.
Wow, that's very interesting.
Right? Who else should we feed? If it's not alive, you shouldn't feed it. Now, what is really alive is considered a metabolically active cell. So yes, your brain is alive, your muscles are alive, and so on. A bone is not all that alive. It's not metabolic that active. It doesn't need to eat every day all the calories you eat. So taking statistics, looking at the chart, for example, if the more muscle mass you have, the more you can eat. The less muscle mass you have, the less you should eat, because it's only the metabolically active cells who are actually eating, so only feed those. But we already established that 50-60% of you is water, so let's take that away. So there's only 40% of you, and now that's also fat, right? We have certain fats which is alive, and then we have the fat which we don't want, well, don't feed it anymore, right? I mean, come on now.
But how do you change that in your mind to say, if you're only feeding 30% of your body, correct? Mm-hmm. Let's just say.
Correct.
And you have breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Is it 10, 10, and 10?
Well, listen to the foods that he's going to tell you, because he's going to tell you proteins, feeds.
True, exactly. We come to that. But yes, well, I look every meal, every time when you put something in your mouth, ask your question, who am I feeding? And there is an instinct, just as we should have an instinct in spiritual path, we should have an instinct about our body. And we said, well, we lost that instinct. Now, first of all, put that knowledge back in the mind that you're not feeding all of you. That's very important. You don't need to feed all of you every time.
Very interesting.
Right?
Yes.
Really don't. And so we all can probably assume or agree that we eat too much, right? I mean,
especially right now through the holidays, right?
Exactly, for the holidays. You know, we all eat too much. And it's kind of a phenomenon here with the doggy bag, right?
Well, look at the quantities. When you go into the restaurant, in South Africa, we didn't have that. We would have you'd get a small plate of food.
Correct. Here, the size
is the salad that you'd put on a bowl, on a table for.
That's basically why I bring it up, with the doggy bag. We all bring home doggy bags. Well, that was already assuming that there was too much on the plate. Now, we bring home a doggy bag and said, well, I didn't eat all. Well, it was too much to start off with. Well, so when you sit in front of your plate, whatever that might be, it might be just pancakes, whatever, look at it and say, well, who am I feeding with this? You know, and some of it is emotional. Some of it is for your face because you really want it. And then the rest is for your body, who is actually live and ticking and eating, you know, and actually metabolizing that food, right?
Right, right. Now, what food triggers hunger and increased appetite?
That's one of my, it's when we talk about diet and so on, we go into, as Sharon said, you know, the proteins and the carbohydrates and so on. We will touch on a little on the tastes. So what tastes trigger a further appetite? If you start off your day wrong, you most likely going to finish it up wrong. I think that's the same as the spiritual Mira said. Mm-hmm. She said, you know, start off with meditation, start with mindfulness, mm-hmm. and so on. Same thing. If you start off with a sweet food, sweet tasting foods, might that be orange juice, which we all think it's so healthy, all right? Not that great. But let's say we have a breakfast of orange juice, waffles, pancakes, and some maple syrup. And to top it all off, we're going to have a hot chocolate. Right? So there's only the sweet taste. Now, sweet taste will trigger insulin. Insulin in itself, which we get too much of it, insulin is a hormone, as I explained last time, and that hormone will make you do certain things like go and eat more sweet food. So if you start breakfast with a sweet breakfast, well, you're going to end up throughout the day looking for more sweets. Most likely you're going to end up at night before you go to bed with something else sweet. And you wake up again in the morning needing some more sweets.
So, Roland, and I just want to remind anybody that's just tuning in right now, you are listening to The Kim Pagano Show. We're talking with Roland Reeve, and his practice is... it's in Thousand Oaks, right? Give the name of your practice.
My practice is called Natural Healthcare Center, and it's in Thousand Oaks, as
correct.
You said.
Correct, mm-hmm. Yeah. What would you start your morning with?
Well, let's touch on the what I do start with my breakfast is I have to have some fat and I have to have some protein. The carbohydrates come in very easily. I don't start off with just the cereal and with an orange juice. I need, and now I have sometimes eggs and sometimes a turkey sandwich. Sometimes I have the oatmeal with just nuts. So I have about three breakfasts which I rotate throughout my week so that I don't always have the same thing. But I'm very cognitive that I do not start off with a sweet dominated breakfast. You know, so we can start off with some tea with some sugar in it, and there is your sweet there. But then we should have actually the other taste. Might that be salty or might that be a bitter and so on, but stay away from sweet. Bring back the breakfast like we used to have, a breakfast, not an entertainment. You're not supposed to entertain yourself first thing in the morning.
So not dessert first.
Well, exactly. Well, right, that touches up, yes. And you know, that might be a good segue to our holidays, right? So we come to Aunt Wilma and she has all the goodies out, right? And there's going to be a big dinner waiting for us. Right? It's going to be a big Christmas dinner, you know? And then we start snacking on sweet stuff already, you know? That A, it doesn't just stimulate insulin, you end up eating more sweets, but it really shuts down your digestion.
Oh.
It's just why are you supposed to eat the breakfast sweets at last? You know, even Rolling Stone said you can't eat your pudding off before you have eaten your meat, you know.
Right.
You can't eat breakfast first. I mean, that may be synonymous with life of going, sure, take the joy first, you know. But no, you want the sweet, if at all, have it last, because it shuts down your digestion. You're not going to digest very well after that.
So how can we make our food digest better? Just by that?
Well, that's one. Don't eat sweets first. Don't eat sweets during the day. Don't eat sweets before a big meal. What we should eat before is a bitter substance. You know, in Europe and in other countries, maybe South Africa as well, we have bitter drinks as an aperitif before a big meal. So if we have a Chinar or a Cinzano or those red drinks, which you occasionally see, they're quite bitter. And we use also lemon rind. And that's what you want to actually drink or eat. Like artichokes would be good. Olives would be okay. Anything slightly bitter, go totally away from the sweets, will stimulate your gastric juices and get you ready to digest the food.
Wow. So just before you're going to eat a meal, eat something bitter.
Or drink something bitter, like in the holidays or in other times when we have an aperitif. The word aperitif comes before a meal, should be a bitter drink.
When you say bitter, is that spicy?
No, bitter is bitter. Bitter is actually a bitter
like
substance.
Like lemon?
Well, beer generally is bitter. Lemon rind would be bitter. You know, if you take a lemon rind and you wipe it above your drink on the glass so that the bitterness, that you taste that little bitter.
So you just need a little bit?
Doesn't take much.
And that'll stimulate the metabolism.
Correct. Mm. That gets you ready. Same thing when you ate too much. Let's say, oh my God, I ate too much, and I threw all the advice of Roland to the dogs, and we'll just eat our faces, and we just eat too much. And now here it's 8:30 at night, and you ate too much, and you're totally stuffed, and you're uncomfortable. What should you do? Should eat more sweets?
No.
Is that going to help?
No.
Have some more whipped cream.
Bitter.
That's not gonna. Bitter. Like
interesting, very
bitter
interesting.
Substances. Don't go into the sweets. So drinking, now I personally like beer. Beer is bitter. You
oh,
know,
so
if you want to
have a beer.
But
you
is
can
it
have
any beer?
Like,
is any beer bitter? Or
any
you
beer will
oh,
be
interesting.
Bitter. Any beer. Now some beer more bitter, some beer sour. Now I'm saying beer because in America we don't know, again, digestive. Aperitif is before a meal and the digestive drink would be after the meal. But guess what? It's again bitter. You know Fernet Branca? Does that
yes,
does that ring?
My
Fernet Branca. Yes,
used to drink that.
But
wasn't that terrible?
Oh my God, this
I
is terribly
it
bitter.
Once. It is so bad.
It's so bitter. But if you feel too stuffed and you drink a Fernet Branca or a bitter drink or have something a little, if nothing else, just have a little bit of a lemon rind or a grapefruit rind or something, or have a little grapefruit. Anything
right.
bitter will get you there. There is also digestive herbal drinks. You know, they say digestive herbs. Well, they are slightly bitter. Fennel, slightly bitter.
Wow.
Let's just talk about the overeating just and give a couple of tips of saying, okay, you know, be mindful, not just sitting there stuffing your face and not even thinking about what you...
Like a bag of potato chips?
Yeah, well...
that's her weakness, okay.
But I'm doing it mindfully, though. Remember, sure I are. Set the intention, and then I watch what else I eat around it. I don't do that
you
as well as
with
everything
the rest
else.
Of your food, yes.
I allow myself this treat once every so often.
So you're cognitive of your action.
I'm very cognitive of the fact that, yes, I'm overindulging in this, but I don't do it very often.
Fair
and
enough.
I know that this is what I really, you know, if I need the salty or whatever, I'm doing this and I'm not going to do anything else.
A means to an end. So again, who am I feeding? Well, I'm feeding my emotions right now and I'm crunching down on those chips. Well, no, it's fine.
It's very true.
It's true.
Yeah.
Be mindful. So if you sit down in front of this Christmas dinner, first of all, don't load your plate up. You're not feeding all of you.
Right.
You don't need to. You need to about feed a third of you. So probably a third of the plate. Not. I mean, not kidding. I mean, make it a third. You can go for seconds. It's okay. But let's touch. Go ahead, Sharon.
So tell them what to do when you've got Aunt Whoever saying, "No, you need to eat this," and "No, you have to taste this." And what do they do?
Well, again, quantity is of issue. When Aunt Wilma says, "Well, come on, eat this." She's not saying eat the whole damn pot.
Right.
Maybe she is.
Well, maybe she might, right? But, you know, in all fairness, she's saying...
You're eating for her emotions.
Yes. You want to satisfy her, but she's certainly satisfied if you are just trying it, you know? And that touches on the flavors of foods, you know? If we eat all the flavors, and that's now Chinese medicine, and I think there's part of that is why we don't feel satiated. Satiated, I guess is the word. If we eat all flavors during one meal, we should have a sense of satiation where we are satisfied.
Mm.
We have come to become accustomed to once we are full, as in too full, we think that's now satiated. But actually satiated is when you are comfortable and you don't need anything anymore. You see, it's kind of interesting that we always go for something sweet at the end. It doesn't matter how much we ate, we still want some sweet dessert at the end.
It's conditioning, though, like saying, this is what we do.
Partially, but partially your body says, you know, I was missing that flavor sweet.
So if you feed it every flavor, then you're
correct.
Good to go.
That is correct. Let's say an Indian meal, probably all of us have gone to an Indian restaurant and so on. You don't need the dessert in order to get that sweet. They eat a little chutney,
right?
Then you have a little spicy things in there. And then there's occasionally that herb or that spice or that vegetable where you go, whoa, that's a little bitter. The Indian Ayurvedic medicine tries to feed you all the flavors in one meal.
So that makes my next question. Of all the cultures, which food culture you think would be the best? You're thinking the Indian food in a sense, right?
Well, they incorporate the flavors. You know, we all agree that the Mediterranean diet is our healthiest diet, right? It comes from the Greek island of Mykonos. They studied that diet and said, this is considered for us white folks the best diet, right? But they have the vinegar, they have the sour. They do eat more vegetables and they eat less of the simple carbohydrates and so on. And that would be specifically diet. Now, when we talk about flavors, I think the Thai food, the Indian food, including Chinese food, you know, they have the hot and sour and the sweet and sour foods and so on. They combine more flavors than we dare to do. And so if we feed our body the flavors in one meal, all the flavors, including bitter, and I'm bringing bitter up because bitter people don't want bitter. They want sweet, but we want it the sour, we want the spicy, we want the salty, and we want, and so on. We want all those flavors. Then you actually have a complete meal, and you should feel, without being stuffed, satisfied.
And also remember that the food takes time to hit your brain to say that you're full. So you're eating, and then you've overeaten.
Correct. We eat too fast, and you bring that point out. It takes up to 40 minutes before the brain, you know, knows that you're actually full. By then, you have had your third plate. You have eaten too much, meaning we ate too fast. And that brings another point up about good digestion. Why should we eat slow? You know, we say, chew your food. But has you ever heard, why should you chew your food? Why is
that? Well, you break down the food when you chew it properly instead of just swallowing it whole.
Correct.
Right, and obviously your digestive system, correct?
Correct,
and,
but there's
and
actually...
And with the brain, by the time the brain triggers that you're actually... You know, and also we eat mindlessly, so it's down... I sometimes will, if I'm on the run, I'll say, I inhaled that.
Correct.
Okay. I didn't even hit my brain. I didn't taste it. I didn't savor any of the the tastes of it.
And some of the tastes come out by chewing. If you chew just a simple piece of bread for, let's say, 3 minutes, but chew it, don't swallow it, this becomes quite sweet. Mm-hmm. And you start to realize that's actually a sweet flavor. Mm-hmm. But there's another reason why you should chew your food, actually.
Of course,
you break it down. But your saliva is supposed to wrap up every molecule of your food. So when you swallow now that molecule, might that be a protein or might that be in particular vegetables and starches and so on. If you swallow those and they are wrapped up in saliva, the stomach acid can now penetrate that cell and get the nutrients out.
Mm.
So it's not just about masticating. Otherwise, we might as well just put it all in a blender, right? That's the the fruit smoothie, right? And then you guzzle it down. But you have not wrapped it up in saliva. Mm. Your stomach cannot digest it, cannot extract the nutrients. Your brain doesn't get the signal, hey, by the way, I'm satisfied. Now you're starting to feed your face.
So we're not communicating.
It's communication,
it's,
yes.
Again, I mean, really, very interesting, Roland. You know, I want to let my listeners know kind of all the areas that you take care of and you know, the different things that you deal with in your office.
Well,
you're so passionate about what you do. That's what I love about it. He really is.
Well, I am passionate about it to see actually the complexity, just as Miriam explained also the course of miracle, the complexity of life and the acorn and so on. I'm in awe how the body works. And we do step aside from us. We do step on it and get in the way of our bodies to make that function well. I have become a diplomat of anti-aging of an organization which is called Anti-Aging of America and so on, have done that. But I practice mainly functional medicine, and that is to support the function of the body so it can take care of yourself. As Miriam Essel said, we cannot be in charge. The body is ultimately so wise, we have to step aside and just do the minimum it needs to actually exist and keep us healthy.
Roland, can I ask you a question? Give me a few tips that I can pass on to someone who has cancer in terms of what they should eat.
Mm-hmm.
Some food groups that would...
Because their body obviously is...
Breaking down. It's not strong enough to overcome the cancer. Many cancers, most cancers are associated with toxic symptoms in the body, or where the body can simply not get rid of toxins. Might that be hormones, or might that be chemicals from your air and so on. So the food groups which support your detoxification are called cruciferous vegetables. Those are all the broccolis, cauliflower, bok choy, cabbage. Those are the sulfur-containing vegetables. They're called cruciferous vegetables. They're the ones who give you occasional gas, which is not that pleasant, but that's part of the sulfur. That sulfur helps to metabolize and actually get rid of fat-soluble toxins, including hormones. Most hormones, especially in females, well, in males too, are hormone-driven. So as long as we keep those hormones in our body, they are like fertilizer to the cancer. If you eat cruciferous vegetables...
Should you do it every day? Could you make a soup every day?
You should include cruciferous vegetables. Here's a great recipe, actually, for the holidays as well. It's something which I like doing. I don't particularly like Brussels sprouts as a child. I gagged on them. Now I know they are good, so I tell myself I need them. But how to make Brussels sprouts good? I add cranberry at the end. So when you boil your Brussels sprouts, and just before they are kind of done, dump out the water, leave a little bit of water in there, just a smidge of water, bring some cranberry, a whole handful, be generous, throw the cranberries in there, bring the water again to a boil, cover them up just before the cranberries are about to pop. Take it from the stove, put it in a plate. It looks beautiful. Cranberries and cauliflower.
Why are the Brussels sprouts good for you?
Brussels sprouts is one of the major cruciferous vegetables.
Really?
Major. That's when it stinks a bit, that Brussels sprouts.
Yeah,
you know,
I love
that's
Brussels
that
sprouts.
Sulfur. And we don't get enough sulfur in our diet. We avoid it. And unless you have that sulfur, you cannot get rid of toxins in your body. And then you actually have to poop them out. That's how they come out, those toxins.
Could you eat too many?
It will be challenging on your partner.
Really? I was going to say, if you're alone.
There you go. Yeah.
But is there too much of something? It would be hard-pressed to eat too much Brussels sprouts or too much cabbage. But I assume, yes, anything in too much is bad. A little bit every day, because you need to eliminate every day.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. You know, I mean, really, these are things that that we should all know. You know, last week, my husband, it's our time to have our colonoscopy right now, you know.
Yeah.
And some of the things that we forget that we need to take care of our bodies. And I do want to remind all my listeners that, you know, it's so important to really be mindful and take care of our bodies and make sure that everything is, you know, I mean, that's the hard part about our digestion, right? Of our intestines and everything.
Yes, we suffocate our bodies with too much food, too much bad food, even if we do good food, but too much food, not enough elimination, you know, and touching on that. Whatever goes in, make sure it comes out. Make sure it comes out in a timely fashion. You know, I mean, what if I ask patients about their bowel movement regularity and so on, some patients actually are not cognitive of when their last bowel movement was. I don't quite understand that. They will tell you the last three meals, but they cannot tell you when they have had the last bowel movement. It seems to elude them. It's important. Whatever goes in should come out within 12 to 16 hours. It should come out. Otherwise, where is it going?
Huh. Very good question to end on. Roland Reif, give us your address and your name and your phone number and everything, where to get in touch with you.
My center is called the Natural Healthcare Center. It's at 223 Thousand Oaks Boulevard, Suite 324 in Thousand Oaks. My phone number is 805-497-4074.
Roland, what is your tips for the holiday right now that we can kind of, you know, go through parties, eat comfortably, but be mindful of our bodies?
You know, what comes right to mind is, which I take part in it myself, if you know you're going to have a big dinner, you might want to compensate by not eating too much before that. Now, you don't have to make up for breakfast and lunch and eat all that at night, you know, but be mindful, eat a very small breakfast. Don't start with sweet stuff.
Monitor. Right?
And then if lunch or this dinner starts at 3 o'clock, you certainly don't need a lunch per se. But when you get somewhere and there's all the goodies out there, start to eat the sweets last. Don't start to eat the sweets first. Have something bitter. Have some celery is bitter. Artichokes are bitter and olives are bitter. So go for those aperitif things before. There are always some goodies out there, but stay away from the sweets. And then take out less than you need. Touch on all the foods. And if you want seconds, go for it. But be aware of who you are feeding.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much for being my guest. Sharon Savitson, give out your phone number.
Okay, 818-744-5859, or email me at sharon@sharonsavitson.com.
Give us a tip for stress right now.
Meditation, praying, love yourself.
I think that's a huge one.
It all starts with you. Give yourself the gift of loving yourself and just, you know, allow yourself to have some fun and forgiveness, work on the forgiveness.
Right. I think, you know, so many tips that we've talked about today. And, you know, I mean, it's funny, even with the marriage, what was she?
Helen.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the matchmaker. You know, really take time to know who you are, because that's the only time that you can really give of yourself. Truly give of yourself. Marianne Williamson, The Law of Divine Compensation, Work, Money, Miracles. Really just be who you are. And also Dr. Wagner, The Fifth Decade of Premenopause. You know, be kind. Be kind. This is our human right to be who we are. With that, I've enjoyed talking with you today. You've been listening to The Kim Pagano Show every Saturday from 2 to 4. And again, if you would like to be a part of my show, give me a call at 805-419-0008, or you can email me at kim@kimpaganoshow.com. With that, I always end all of my shows with a mommy moment, and today's is, rather than getting depressed and dejected over your trials and tribulations, why not view them as opportunities and manifest your internal courage? With that,
I thank you for being here, and I hope that the rest of your weekend is amazing. Again, Facebook us. I want to know who you are out there. I'm so glad that you have had a chance to listen, and again, I hope that your life can be as great as you want it to be. With that, I thank all of you. I'm Kim, and you've been listening to The Kim Pagano Show.
Try to see things my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can go on? While you see it your way, on the risk of knowing that our love may soon be gone.
I'm a lifelong Ventura County resident, and I hate to admit it, but I'm guilty of something, and I'm guilty of being what you call a hair jumper. And what that means is that I'm not really loyal to any one particular barber, stylist, or hair cutter, and that also means my hair doesn't always look as good or as great as it could. Until that is, I met Kim Pagano, the one and only hair therapist of Westlake Village. Now, I wasn't a believer until I got up from her chair and saw the magic she did on this head of hair. And I know she's going to do the same for you. So give her a call, 818-612-0832. That's 818-612-0832. She's going to change your life. She's going to change the life of your hair. And she's going to end your days as a hair jumper. Give Kim Pagano, the hair therapist of Westlake Village, a call. It's 818-612-0832.
If you're a business owner or looking to be one, put Littlefoot Construction on the top of your list. Littlefoot Construction specializes in restaurant remodels, tenant improvements, office remodels. Call Littlefoot Construction with all your commercial and industrial needs. Littlefoot Construction works with big or small businesses. Or even if it's a dream, Littlefoot Construction will make your vision come true. Call Littlefoot Construction at 805-491-2759. That's 805-491-2759 for all your construction needs.